What is up, everybody?
Welcome back to Mile Higher Podcast, episode 59. And today we're going to be talking about the Bobbitts, which is a true crime case, actually, that I'm sure many of you have heard about. It's definitely like an infamous case in history, but it is really, really interesting. And I was actually going to do a video on it on my channel. And I mean, didn't want to do that for two reasons. One, the demonetization on YouTube is like insane, and I don't want to be on YouTube's bad side right now. But second of all, this topic, I think, requires a lot of conversation and would be best suited for a podcast.
Absolutely. It's a lot of, and, like, and it's just going to be opinion. And it's about a, you know, husband and a wife.
Yeah.
And
so who better to talk about it than us?
Yeah. And we don't want to give away the story right now, but this is a wild one, guys. So yeah, it might make you squirm in your seat a little bit.
Yes.
Squirm. But I wanted to jump right into things. So we've got a Patreon question this week. It's a good one. So here's the question for us. What is your guess as to what is truly inside the Sphinx in Egypt? Do you think they've already retrieved what's inside of it and have kept it under wraps, possibly? So, A, do you think there's something hidden in the Great Sphinx of, or the Sphinx of Giza?
I mean, I think the chances are probably pretty good since there's so many different stories and like references to it in like ancient culture and stuff.
Well, we don't even know why it's there.
No.
How long it's there.
It's been there a really long time. They think longer than the pyramids.
Yeah, I think absolutely longer than the pyramids. Mm-hmm. But they did somewhat recently discover that there are hidden tunnels within it. Like there's hidden, you know, pathways or you know, kind of like tunnel system inside of it, because they're able to scan the outside of it. So there's clearly something going on inside, but nobody's been given permission to like go into it and try to retrieve whatever's in there, if there is something in there.
Oh, that's interesting.
But who knows what it could be?
I mean, I really think there probably is something, but I haven't yet thought about the fact that they may have already gone in and gotten it.
It's very possible.
Even,
yeah.
Damn, that would suck. I didn't even think about that before I read this question.
Yeah, I mean, Egyptian monuments are empty, basically.
I wouldn't be surprised if they cleared it and hid it.
I don't know, though, because you would think if they did get into it, there would be some apparent, unless they went into it, then they covered it up and
yeah,
we just can't notice it. But I don't know. I think we would know. So I don't know. If I had to make a guess, it'd probably have to be, if it's something really crazy, then maybe it's, you know, something even from outer space or something. Like, what if they found some type of energetic crystal or like some sort of radioactive
power source,
some type of like, yeah, energy source within something. It.
Element 15, 115.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Maybe.
Like an element that we're not like familiar with or something like that.
Yeah.
If you don't know what element 115 is, like Google it, do a quick Google searchy.
Or it could just be something completely unknown that's not even known to us.
Yeah. Who knows?
Or the Ark of the Covenants there for some reason.
I have no idea.
That's an interesting thing too. There's a lot of theories about the Ark of the
Covenant.
Yeah, we should
do a whole like podcast on that.
I know. I love the ancient shit. The ancient shit's so interesting.
I do too.
Because there's so much we don't know about them, you know?
Yeah.
I know. It's crazy. But let's go ahead and jump into today's or this week's news stories. So first of all, there's been a lot of shit going on as far as natural disasters between tornadoes and now these massive floods in the Midwest. Like, guys, if you're in these areas, like, we really feel for you and, you know, hope you stay safe and, you know, take care of yourself
and
your family.
It's a mess.
I can't even imagine. I've never had to deal with flooding of any kind. And I can imagine that flooding would be really difficult to deal with because, first of all, you basically lose everything because, you know, you can't stop water from filling up. So,
yeah. Cars are left abandoned. Like, it's a mess right now. It's like pretty much a state of emergency.
Yeah. It's historic flooding down there.
Yeah. And I feel like it's important we mention that this week because we talked about, you know, climate change last week and flooding, how it will happen.
Yeah.
And the sad reality of this is like, it's only going to continue to happen. Like, it's just the reality of climate change that hopefully people are waking up and seeing it's real and it's not going to slow down. There's no way to stop it. It's crazy. It really is. And it feels pretty overwhelming seeing those pictures. I just saw someone's drone footage. Someone just flew their drone up wherever. I can't remember exactly the area, but it was somewhere where the flooding was.
Oh, really? Oh,
and
wow.
It was just insane.
Yeah, I bet
insane.
That was
insane. Like
footage.
Flowing rapids going down like
Like Main Street.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Just insanity. It's crazy, so yeah, we really feel for everyone dealing
and
with
that. And this is not even from ocean either. This is like from rivers mostly.
Yep.
And it's affecting the entire Midwest of the United States. It's it's really,
really bad.
I mean, the natural disasters are just getting worse and worse and worse. So yeah, I mean, I don't know what we're going to do about it, but I guess be prepared. You got to be prepared for this kind of stuff to happen if it's going to happen more often. But what do? You know, you can't just like relocate yourself. So, you know, you got to deal with it. And, you know, kudos to all of you guys that have to deal with this shit, because we're pretty, I mean, we're pretty lucky here in Colorado. We had the, you know, the bomb cyclone, and we got a huge blizzard for like 2 days.
They really called it the bomb cyclone?
Yeah, it's literally what the storm was called. Yeah.
Why?
Bomb cyclone, or it's a bomb cyclone.
Interesting.
Because it's like a, yeah, it's like a giant winter cyclone coming through.
It was crazy, but shit is already melted. We're back to warmish weather. Actually, it was raining today, but yeah, crazy. Yeah,
it is crazy. So the other thing that I kind of heard about this week or this past week is Tom DeLonge. If you don't know who he is, he's former Blink-182 frontman, and he's a huge UFO alien guy, and he now has a company called To The Stars. We've talked about it on the show before, but he and History Channel are releasing a series called Unidentified, which will be centered around an interview with Lou Elizondo, so the former military intelligence official who was the head of the UFO research program at the Pentagon. And according to Tom, there's going to be some like really groundbreaking stuff in this, and a lot of things that are going to make, you know, hopefully a lot of people that watch the History Channel go, wow, this is incredible. And people that have never seen this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
With new new footage, new types of technology, the anti-gravity stuff, the element stuff.
And I'm sure he's telling the truth. I mean, he's really followed through with a lot of the things he said he's going to like release.
Yeah. Well, I think it's going to be kind of, you know, their version of Dr. Greer's Unacknowledged, which, by the way, if you haven't seen that, you definitely need to watch that.
Oh, yes.
As far as like all of the military officials coming forth, like they're going to have these generals and high ranking military officials that worked within this program or have seen unidentified, you know, flying objects before during their service to tell their stories and tell, you know, present the evidence and the case for there's fucking life out there, you know, on our doorstep basically. And they're fucking there, and they're, you know, here's the evidence for it. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with that.
And I feel like some of the best evidence in a way, or what's most convincing to me, even like, of course the footage is great too, but like just hearing people's stories, the more you hear and they sound so real.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm like coughing over here.
Oh my Lord.
I think I have like bronchitis coming on or something.
Let's hope not. Oh my Lord, guys. I'm so sorry.
I've been coughing all day. Here, pick up for me. What do I do? I wish there was like a cough button.
Pull yourself together.
Remember when we first started, you were like, there's a cough
button.
That's
radio, though. That's radio that has a cough
button. I want a motherfucking cough button.
No, we can just go and edit it out. Okay. Anyways, Unidentified is coming. It's coming very soon. It's a 6-part series on History Channel. And yeah, it's premiering in May, and it should be pretty groundbreaking. And I think a lot of people, I mean, we're starting to see more people come into the subject
the worst.
Every single week, and more people, you know, see more celebrities tweeting about aliens, and I don't know. I mean, or maybe a lot of people have been totally alien fans, and now that there's like, you know, more,
I feel like we're just having a general awakening towards all this type of stuff. There's a general interest in space. Just the interest in like astrology, I've noticed, has picked up in the you know, we talked in the astrology episode. I'm not sure how many of you listened to that, but we talked about the different ages and how we're going into the age of Aquarius. Yeah. And it really seems like people are more and more open to the idea of aliens and all of this stuff. So it's really cool.
100%.
What a time to be alive, you know?
I mean, I hope so bad that we see. I just want to see.
I think we
one.
Talk about this every week.
But you know what? Like, this is what everybody wants to hear. I mean, everybody wants
to hear how much we want to see an alien.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't want to see an alien? If you don't want to see an alien, then
I kind of don't, because that's going to ruin my life, I feel like. It's not like you can go back to normal life after that.
It's true, it's going
to
flip the whole freaking paradigm once
They once can they do stay like, themselves. How about they like reveal themselves like 5 years before I'm about to die so that I can stay normal until then.
But seriously, like the amount of articles that I see on a daily basis about either it's alien theories or like,
yeah,
where are they? NASA
there's
seems
a
like
serious interest every week, in it. Yep.
Every week there's a NASA article about how they're building some type of machine or whatnot to
ramping
go and search
for
aliens.
Sure.
Like, it's coming. I think disclosure is coming, guys. It's coming.
You sound like one of those whack jobs.
What?
You sound like insane. Like, if I didn't understand what you were saying and I just
No, I know what you
had no understanding of aliens, I would listen to you and be like, wow, this guy's crazy.
Sound like,
but that's what a lot of people would listen to this and be like, wow, they're insane. A lot of people are not ready for what's coming. They are so uninformed and they are going to be
the day that
they are going to be stressed out.
Be like, what?
I know. It's good to be informed. That's for sure.
But I think people are going to accept it. I think it's going to literally.
I think you're really overestimating people. I think people are going to lose their shit.
Just go nuts.
Oh, yeah. Looting, like fires, like riots. It's going to be. Oh,
wow.
Yeah. You think people are just going to be like, oh, sweet. Cool.
Yeah.
Like, let's go back to normal. No way. No way.
It's going to be a fall.
People will
war.
Quit their jobs. Oh, yeah. Shit will be crazy. I'm sure like economies will tank. If we find. There are aliens that
like
come
if
to
they
Earth.
Come and like land and like,
oh yeah
reveal, like
yes
come out. Yeah
they're not just gonna like be normal like on your Twitter feed, by the way, aliens landed today at 10 a.m
True.
Okay
people
oh that's cool
freak,
no
yeah.
Everyone's gonna go insane
like what,
and most people are not ready for this. Like when this happens, most of us that listen to this, you know,
yeah,
know about this kind of stuff, will be like, oh wow, I've been
like,
waiting
hip,
for this
hooray, hip hip hooray.
No I'm gonna be like here. Holy fuck, I'm having an anxiety attack.
Really?
But then I'm going to be kind of excited. I don't know. It depends.
Just hope
if they're
nice,
just normal yeah. looking, if they like look like people maybe, or they're like not scary.
Yeah.
If there are giant bugs, I think I'm going to be freaking out just a little bit.
Or like reptilians.
What if
or
they're
something?
Like slug things.
Giant reptiles.
Or someone said, remember we like heard like some whistleblower guy said that there were like
praying mantis
yeah. species.
Yeah. It's a pretty like,
I don't want to see that. Like that I can live without. Right.
A little terrifying.
Like, yeah. So, I don't know.
I think you're right. I think it'll depend on a lot of factors.
Yeah, I think it's easy to say like, oh, I'm so excited for aliens to come, but like.
But if they look like they're going to like eat my soul
yeah.
out, I'd be like, oh, shit.
Yeah, and should they have could.
Fucked with these guys.
And
yeah,
they could.
They could.
You never know.
The possibilities are endless. But anyway, we'll link that for you guys. You should definitely check that out. It's interesting stuff. But the last news article I had for us is about the cannabis industry, something that we are very passionate about. But this is interesting because literally the cannabis industry is booming, and it's booming so much that literally it's creating more full-time jobs than like any other jobs. Like over 211,000 full-time jobs in the legal cannabis industry, with over 64,000 of these full-time jobs being added in 2018 alone. So like this is just growing and growing and growing.
Yeah, it's really like the place to be right now.
It really is. I mean, it's going to end up being a multi-billion dollar industry.
Oh yeah.
Within the next 5 to 10 years.
Well, there's a lot of people out there that just aren't aware of how great marijuana really is.
Right.
Like me, I used to judge the hell out of it. Now I'm, you know, a medical user of it for autoimmune disease. And it's like a huge part of my life.
Yeah.
And imagine how many people could benefit from it that just like judge it right now because they think it's like a drug. It's like they think it's like heroin or something.
Yeah, exactly. And part of the whole legalization process is going to be enabling it to be researched more and enabling it to be, you know, used in all these different methods. Like a lot of people just think, you know, like we've talked about, weed is just, you know, the flower weed. You know, we're not talking about tinctures and oils and edibles mm-hmm. and all of these other different forms of cannabis that can be used for just strictly medicinal purposes. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's not just a bunch of hippies getting high, hanging out, chilling with their friends.
That's a very, very misunderstood.
No, I mean, most people, you know, of all walks of life, take advantage of the benefits. So the actual stat I was looking for is it's set to be the largest and fastest job creator in the entire country, and it's not even legalized nationally yet. So in the US, as soon as it's legalized nationally, can you imagine the boom of, because I mean, it's going to create jobs across every single state, and it's going to propel to that multi-billion dollar industry. And not only that, it's going to hopefully encourage other countries out there like the UK, Australia, who just pretty much, or not recently, but they have legalized medicinal marijuana there. And maybe it'll help, you know, push them in that direction as well.
I think so. But I mean, seeing it as a success in other, that's like what's helped it get legalized in other states just here is seeing what a success it's been in certain states. Like in Colorado, it's been a wild success. It's
yeah,
helped our schools, it's absolutely helped our whole state.
The tax revenue yeah, from it alone is mm-hmm, is astounding. Like,
mm-hmm,
and it really does boost the economy. And I mean, mm-hmm, there's really not that many negatives that have come from it.
Mm-mm.
You know, way less than, you know, the alcohol industry, in which oh, it will yeah, take that over in no time.
I know.
But one of the things that happened recently was Florida actually just recently got their medicinal marijuana ability to, or the ability to purchase flower and use flower. They haven't been able to use flower and they're only legal medicinally right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the new governor just reversed that. So they're now able to get flower. It had to be like in pods and like every other type of form before. So that's good news. And hopefully, you know, I was like, why isn't Florida legal? Out of all the places, you'd think Florida would be.
Really?
Yeah.
I feel like Florida's kind of conservative in a lot of ways.
It is, but they're also more lax on prescription and stuff. Like, you know, and like, it's a very, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess it is the South and stuff, and it's not really popular there. Mm-hmm. But over 62% of U.S. residents favor an end to the prohibition of cannabis. So that's,
this is stupid. It doesn't make any sense. Like, bottom line is, if cannabis should be illegal, then alcohol definitely should.
Right.
Alcohol is yeah, so much worse.
Or cigarettes.
So many more.
I mean, if you look at cigarettes too.
If they really just care about people's health. Which no one ever has overdosed from marijuana ever. Never. Literally ever. So it's like, it's almost comical that people will argue about that, but then still think alcohol should be legal. When there's a lot of research about how alcohol is way worse for our bodies, and we might not even be supposed to. I'm just like, can't talk tonight.
we may not even have the ability to.
Yes, we're not. We might built. Not. Yeah, we not, but might not be built.
Gotcha.
I give up. I'm done.
You got this.
I know, but yes, I feel like it is just completely a ridiculous argument, really. And I've had this argument with people that think that alcohol is perfectly fine and should be legal, but weed shouldn't. And it just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, you can't just say that, oh, it causes harm to, you know, you physically, which is not true in the first place. And
no, and alcohol causes and has actual research and actual, like, literally so many people die from it. I have family members that have died from drugs, alcohol, literally lost close family members to alcohol, straight up just alcohol poisoning stuff. So clearly we're not supposed to have it. And I feel like if that's legal, why isn't marijuana legal? It just doesn't make sense to me.
It doesn't make any sense. But I think something is going to happen, whether it's in the next year or two. I'm saying like 5 years, I think they're going to federally legalize it. I mean, it'll depend on this next election, but.
Yeah. And I'm not saying I think alcohol should be illegal. I hope no one's thinking that. I think it should be someone's choice to put what they want in their body. And it's just,
right.
It just is strange to me.
Well, then the other thing with it that a lot of people don't realize too is, you know, with marijuana, it is treated just like alcohol. Like, you have to be 21 here to go and purchase
yes,
it. You know, you have to show ID. It's mm-hmm, actually a harder process to go get marijuana than it is to go get alcohol.
And
for
some
sure,
people think that, like, because it's legal in our state to use marijuana, that it's also legal to drive under the influence. And that yeah, is not true at all. It's the same as a DUI.
Yeah. I mean, if you get pulled over, they have tests they can do.
Yeah. So I know, but a lot of people are like think that because it's legalized, then you can drive. Don't understand that's not.
No, it's treated the exact same way as alcohol.
Exactly.
You know, if you like, there was actually just a case in Colorado where a teenager was driving super high and he crashed, and now he's going to prison.
He should,
because he might even hit somebody too. But again, like, it's the same situation. You can't mm-hmm, like, discriminate against one because one has the stigma of being a drug. I don't know. That's just my opinion, but. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens with that. I think we're going to see some major things in that part of the world for sure soon. But let's get into the Bobbitts, because this is just a wild, wild story. So get ready. But before we do, I want to quickly thank our sponsors for today's for sponsoring today's episode. Our first sponsor is Fleur. Fleur. Even if you spritz perfume on every day, here's something you might not think about: what's actually in it. That's why Kendall's excited about Fleur.
Yes, I am.
Actually, I'm excited about Fleur too. It's a guy can wear. It's gender free.
It's unisex, so it's awesome. It's really, really clean. Sense of nature.
Yes.
True nature elements. And I really love Fleur just because the uniqueness of the scents. Like, it's really not like anything else.
And they're also, they also are hypoallergenic, cruelty-free, vegan, and sustainably sourced and packaged with recycled material. So
you feel good about using it.
Can't get much more green than that. I mean, that's cool too. And they're all about nature too, like the scents.
Yeah, and you can just feel confident about what you're putting on. You know, a lot of our perfumes and just things we put on our body, cosmetics and stuff, like, we really don't know what's going in them. And if you knew the ingredients, you probably wouldn't want to put them on. So it just takes the worry out of what you're putting on yourself every day. And one that I really, really like is Greylock. I just want to say that's one of my favorites. It's a mixture of pine and sea.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Sandara is good too.
Sandara, yes. I like
Calming
Sandara
and
too.
Meditative, yes. Inspired by a retreat into nature. Mm-hmm. Man, not only have the perfumes, they have body wash, body lotion, as well as candles now as well. So in all of these scents. So all you got to do is go to Fleur.com today and use promo code MILEHIGHER to get 20% off your first custom Fleur sample set. Pick 3 scents to try and get credit towards a full-size bottle of your favorite. That's promo code MILEHIGHER at Fleur.com to get your first 3 fragrance samples at 20% off. PHLUR.com. And our second sponsor is Stamps.com for their loyal support of the show. And no one really has time to go to the post office because you're busy. Who's got time for all that traffic, parking, lugging all your mail and packages? The struggle is real though, man. It's such a hassle.
Hate the post office.
You're like balancing. Like, I'll bring like a bunch of them and then I'll like drop them on my way in or like, oh, it's such a pain. So that's why you need stamps.com, because it's one of the most popular time saving tools for small businesses. So any of you out there with small businesses, if you're not using stamps.com, it will save you trips to the post office as well, saving you money with discounts that you can't even get at the freaking post office. Whether you're a small office sending invoices, an online seller shipping out products, or even a warehouse sending thousands of packages a day, Stamps.com can handle all of it with ease. Simply use your computer to print official U.S. postage 24/7 for any letter, any package, any class of mail, anywhere you want to send, which is super nice and convenient, straight from your home. Once your mail is ready, just hand it to your mail carrier or drop it at a mailbox. It's that simple. With Stamps.com, you get 5 cents off every first-class stamp and up to 40% priority mail, which is a huge discount. Right now, our listeners are getting a special offer that includes 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale without any long-term commitment. Just go to stamps.com, click the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Mile Higher. That's stamps.com. Enter promo code Mile Higher. All right, let's go. Bobbitts. So you want to just kind of give a preface to the story, and because we're going to dive into who the Bobbitts are, who the individuals are a little bit before we talk about the actual event that happens. But what's a good kind of way to describe this whole thing without giving away what happens?
Okay. Well, a lot of you probably know what happens. Lorena and John Bobbitt are pretty famous people, and this was all happening around the time of the O.J. Simpson's trial. So it was kind of like court stuff was really popular then, and people were really into this.
Yeah.
Basically, Lorena and John have like a pretty toxic relationship, and it's complicated. And eventually, Lorena takes some type of revenge on him, as we will talk about. Mm-hmm. But they are both alive, so no one is dead in this crime, which is good.
Yeah, for a change.
Which is, you know, rare for us. We normally have someone.
Lots
of
death
so,
in our show.
In our work. Yeah. Yes, it's more of just a story of their relationship and what happened to them. And then it's definitely going to be something where there's mixed opinions on it. And I think in 2019, this conversation is almost more relevant than it even was back when this happened with the Me Too movement and everything.
Yeah. I mean, it's very controversial. I mean, it's hard to really pin blame on one or the, anyways, you'll just have to see. Yeah. Let's just dive
in. Let's get in.
All right. So first we're going to talk about John Bobbitt or John Wayne Bobbitt. So John, he was born in 1967 and grew up in Niagara Falls, New York. John says that growing up, he watched his mother go through an abusive relationship between her and John's father, which is a very important note to have for later on. Eventually, John's father left and she was left alone with John and his two brothers. John says that they lived in the ghetto and his mom was often raped by other people in the neighborhood. She had difficulty taking care of them, and at the age of 3, he was taken away from his mother, and he and his two brothers were sent to live with his aunt and uncle. According to John, he grew up with a big family and actually went to church every Sunday with them. John said that his biological mother would come around sometimes when he was younger, but stopped coming around later on. John also said that when he was a kid, he had an uncle who molested some of the kids, including John. John was very physically active and competitive. He always wanted to be the best. And as a young adult, when he was of age, he enlisted in the Marines because a bunch of his friends were also enlisting in the Marines. So he actually served in the Marines for a while. And I think when you hear his childhood, obviously it wasn't easy at all. And he definitely endured some trauma there that I think explains his behavior today and explains a lot of the actions he does later on and with Lorena. Just based upon that short bio of him, you know, it makes a lot of sense. So
we were just saying the other day, I don't remember what we were talking about, but I was like, God, the world would be such a different place if we all took time to like understand each other's childhoods. Because so many of the crimes we talk about, we like, not that it excuses anything people do, but it is interesting and definitely makes you understand why someone does something.
Absolutely.
Your childhood is so impactful on your life. I think
so much development happens.
I think it's like Freudian theory.
Yeah.
Sigmund Freud, right? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, that's right.
But I think he says like your personality mainly develops by age like 6. Like the main part of who you are. Like you,
I think so.
Really impacts you. So
if you do endure terrible trauma and abuse at a very, very young, I mean, 3 years old, he was already probably witnessing shit and having shit happen
and hurt other people. Right. So
I think, I mean, you are, you know, that saying, a product of your environment.
Yeah.
And I think your environment growing up is so key to the person that you develop into later on in life. And, you know, not to say that people that go through abuse or tough situations can't, you know, come out even better on the other side.
Oh, and a lot of people do.
Most people do. Right.
Yeah.
But the people that don't get that far,
Well, I mean, there's a reason that most of the time when we look at these crimes, these kids have had messed up childhoods.
Right.
Their parents, like, molested them or beat them or something. And then they go and do it to other people.
Right.
It's like a cycle of abuse. The cycle of abuse is a very, very real thing.
It really is. It really is. It's interesting how all that psychology works. Which, by the way, if I could go back and do a job, like, a criminologist would be super interesting.
Josh, you want to be everything. Josh wants to be an astronaut. Josh wants to also be a pizza maker.
Yes, I do want to be a pizza man.
You always like say you would wish you could work
dream
at like
job.
A pizza
work
shop.
At Domino's.
At Domino's, though. Ew.
Or not Domino's, but a family-owned pizza place.
And they would hire you?
Yes.
At their family-owned Italian pizza shop. A German boy with no Italian in him.
Hey, man.
You don't have any. We've checked.
I don't.
Not a single bit.
I'm pretty white.
You're pretty German.
Yes, I am. Anyways, back to the story. Lorena Bobbitt. She was born in Ecuador in 1969, and by the time she was 7 years old, her parents and her moved to Venezuela. Her family was very hardworking, although they didn't have much money. She was raised in a Catholic household. Lorena visited America for the first time when she was 16 years old, and she said that she immediately fell in love with it. And when she graduated from high school in Venezuela when she was 18, she actually ended up moving to America. She and her family lived in Virginia, and she had a student visa. When she first moved here, she didn't speak any English, and so she took the class English as a second language, which there's a fan out there who's an English as a second language teacher out there. Shout out to you. Yeah. I just happened to see her on Twitter, I think. Sorry, random
That's
thought.
Cool.
But Lorena at the time was also working as a nanny and then a nail tech. At the time, she met John Bobbitt. So when these two get together, oh man, it was love at first sight. They actually met when Lorena was 18 in 1988, and she said that she was madly in love with him. They met at the Marine Corps ball, and it was love at first sight, and they ended up getting married on June 18th, 1989. And the first few months were great at the start, but then things started to change. So yeah, John, I don't think John really knew what he was going to do after he left the Marines. Mm-mm. So when he got out of the Marines, like as do a lot of veterans when they are discharged from the service, they've got to figure out what they're going to do, you know, with the rest of their life and kind of transition to civilian life and get a job and, you know, continue their career. And John, this was just something that he clearly didn't know what he wanted to do because he couldn't keep a job. And so Lorena was the only steady income and kind of the breadwinner in the relationship, which, you know, I think in any relationship, when you have one person that makes all the money, it does create stress no matter what, it doesn't matter how much that person makes. Mm-hmm. When both aren't, you know, contributing in some way. And that's the thing is like John, I don't think was contributing really in any sort of monetary way, but I don't know if he was there in other ways either.
And let's be real. I mean, it's more difficult for a man, like mm-hmm. just by society's, you know, I'm not saying that's what I think, but society as a whole definitely thinks that men should be like the breadwinner right. and puts that label. And so it's probably like harder on a man, you know, like versus if the woman wasn't working, there wouldn't be as much like of a stigma around.
Right. Totally. And it seems like John's the kind of guy that would get kind of down on himself.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't the breadwinner. You know, he just seems like the kind of guy that was like kind of the man. I'm the man of the relationship. I'm the man of the house type of guy. You know, I don't know. That's just at least how I perceive him as.
Yeah.
But the house that they had together was eventually foreclosed on, and Lorena went to great lengths, including stealing from Nordstrom's, to still try and impress her husband, even though she couldn't afford anything. Shoplifted at Nordstrom, a couple dresses there.
Crazy.
Which only fucked up their situation more.
Yeah.
So many times before the incident happens, police were actually called to their where they lived for complaints of domestic violence happening in their house about half a dozen times within the past few years.
And that's really important to note, I think.
Well, the main thing is the stress
in the relationship.
Clearly, there's like turmoil. Yeah. I mean, if the police are getting called because you're fighting, I mean, that's pretty bad.
Yeah. Especially multiple times.
And they were calling it
half a dozen times. Yeah. That's a lot.
And they would just like call it on each other too.
Yeah.
So the police would come out and, you know, I think from what they say, it was a lot of, you know, sort of arguing and shoving and kind of yelling and
just toxic.
Just very toxic. And at one point, John was actually arrested and was ultimately charged with battery and assault. Lorena's friends talked about how they would even see her, and she often had bruises and bumps on her. So clearly, I mean, you don't just get bumps and bruises on you just for yelling at each other. So no. Something physical is happening, clearly. Mm-hmm. And then in 1991, Lorena found out she was pregnant. John and Lorena tell different stories about what really happened when she learned she was pregnant. According to Lorena, she was excited to start a family and really wanted a family. And when she told John the news, he was less than thrilled to hear about it. Interesting. So she says that John didn't think he could care for the child and suggested that he would leave Lorena if she had the baby, which is just fucked.
So bad.
Who fucking does that? And I mean, it's these types of things where you start seeing this dude's character and just
serious
like
controlling, he's got
major,
behavior.
Major flaws. Lorena didn't want to raise the child on her own. She wanted her child to have a dad and a,
yeah, you know,
clearly that was important. And she claims that John was the one who forced her to get an abortion and she ended up doing it.
That's so traumatic to be forced into something like that. It's just so sad. No one should ever have to make that decision unless they want to do it. That's such a personal decision to make and to be forced into it by someone, especially your partner who, I mean, if you're like having sex and you're married and stuff, you should have probably already thought about this or talked this through to not put her through this situation. Like, I feel like they didn't at all. Like, she probably had no idea.
Well, I don't think they were communicating.
It was just a bad situation. And I mean, in a lot of ways, like, maybe it's good they didn't have a baby. It probably would have been brought into a really toxic situation. A really bad relationship.
Yeah, I mean, on the flip side, I mean, as sad as an abortion is, it's like, you know, what was the quality of life if they did come in? I mean, what if something serious happened? You know, these guys are kind of unstable.
Yeah.
And
But at the same time, she should have absolutely, if she wanted to have the baby, she should have been able to do it. It should not have been his choice at all.
Right, right.
Like,
totally.
At the end of the day, I think
she shouldn't have been forced or felt like forced.
Yeah, it's the woman's choice to do what she wants to do with her body at the end of the day, you know?
And I mean, it seems like she was forced in the sense of like threatened with maybe physical violence, like I'll take.
Or just like fear, like you'll be alone. You're going to be a single mom raising them on your own. So
true.
It's like mental intimidation as well. So I think that was really, really hard on her. Like that was like the last straw with her that just was so. I mean, I'd be so angry being forced into something like that. I didn't want to do it, you know?
Yeah.
That was just like serious trauma for her.
It was. Yeah, I can't even imagine. I mean, we're talking about an ex-Marine here, and he's a pretty big guy. Mm-hmm. And she's like a very petite, small woman. Like she was like under 100 pounds, I think, at this point. And yeah, so I can only imagine. But on June 21st, 1993, a little over a day before the incident, Lorena attempted to file a protective order against John. However, the order was never actually put in place because Lorena was asked to leave for several hours while it was being processed to come back later, and she never did, which was a huge mistake, I think, that she didn't stay and get that protective order in place, because that would have definitely helped her.
And they told her it would take like 3 hours to do it.
Surprised she didn't stick around.
And she said, and it was interesting, I thought she was going to say that she like didn't have time for something specific. Like she, you know, had somewhere to go or had some reason. It but it was just like, I just didn't want to wait around for it. Like I didn't want to sit around for hours. Right. And so she didn't do it. And that was a really big mistake. But her going and trying to get that definitely shows what she was dealing with and where her mindset was.
Yeah, I mean, like, it really probably helped her case
having her go the day before.
But to play devil's advocate, someone say that maybe she's just doing this to sort of set the scene for what's about to happen. And, you know, maybe she was.
But I mean, was she also setting the scene with the thing is, all the other 6 police calls they had over the years?
True. That's very true. Yeah. I mean, maybe. I mean, it's possible, but does it seem likely? No. Mm-hmm. So basically what happened was John got off work early the night of the incident on June 22nd. And so he and his friend Bobby went out for some drinks. John said that he didn't drink enough to feel drunk at all. When he got home, he even folded up his clothes, trying to further prove that he was fully functioning at this point. He said he got home at around 3:30 a.m. and went right to sleep. However, Lorena says that while she was sleeping in bed, he got in her bed and started forcibly undressing her and then proceeded to rape her, which is another weird thing about this is the marital rape thing is like.
Yeah. Well, she would give him clear, I don't want to do this. So it is still rape. Like, and you know what's so interesting is how they were talking about. We were watching a documentary on this and they were talking about how like years ago it was just like everyone would stay like what happens in a marriage is between the man and the woman and you stay out of it.
Private,
and there's no such thing as a rape in a marriage.
Like, right.
Basically your property once you're married.
Yeah.
And like obviously now it's different, but.
Yeah, there's a law now in place that.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank goodness. Because just because you're married to someone doesn't mean doesn't you mean are their property.
Right.
That's ridiculous. And that's how he would treat her. And, She would talk about how she was like afraid of him and that he would say like he didn't even know what he was doing. Like sometimes would be in his sleep doing this. Remember he said that shit?
Yeah, right. Yeah. That he would just like, so his defense to being accused of marital rape is basically like.
He was sleepwalking.
I sleepwalk and I sleep sex, I guess. I just have sex while I sleep. And I'm like, what the fuck? I've never even heard of that.
Well, okay.
And forcibly, like
maybe once, but then you'd have like a talk the next day, like, look, dude, there's no more of that sleep sex business anymore. Right, like, let's go take your ass to the doctor and figure out why the fuck you're doing that because no more.
Yeah.
But to say that over, no.
I don't even know if that's a thing though. I've never really heard of that.
Yeah, me either.
Never heard of anybody that does that. I've heard of sleepwalk and sleep
talk. I feel like maybe it could be possible, but I feel like he's totally full of shit.
Multiple times, like it's almost he makes it sound like it's almost like this repeating ongoing problem he has.
But I mean, I don't know. At the same time, like sleep. Well, not that I believe him, but I feel like maybe sleep sex is possible. I don't know. I've seen people do some crazy shit. Your brother would like wake up and like go do things in the middle of the night.
Yeah, but he wouldn't go like have sex with somebody.
Well, no shit. He was a teenager and who was in your house other than you?
But he wouldn't. I mean, even when you're sleepwalking, though, you can walk and you can kind of like do basic things. But
I've never sleptwalked and I've never known anyone who has or seen anyone sleepwalking. So it's hard for me to like, I wonder if you could have sex in your sleep. That's so interesting. It
seems possible to me, but.
But I don't believe him. I think he's full of shit.
Right. Because John said that while he was sleeping, Lorena was trying to talk to him and said, quote unquote, "You hurt my feelings and you did it again and again and again. Are you happy?" But that he didn't show her any sort of response. So I believe that they were talking about divorce, or like that was already something that was happening that sort of, you know, kind of made this more tumultuous, you know, like more toxic. So Lorena says that after being assaulted, she started to feel numb. And she said that while she was laying there in bed for a while, she eventually got up and went to the kitchen for a glass of water. She said she was drinking the water and trying to calm herself down when she saw the knife. I believe it was a 10-inch blade kitchen knife.
And if you don't know this story, you're probably like,
This is about to blow your mind if you haven't heard this. So she sees this knife. She grabs this knife, walks back into the bedroom, and basically proceeds to like pull the covers off him and slices his ding dong off. Like just straight up clean cut.
The cleanest of cuts, dude. I don't know how she did this.
Butcher precision.
And they described it like she was almost in like this blackout of rage. Like she was just like so fearful. And if you think about it, if you're being raped,
right,
a penis is kind of like a weapon in a way. So it's kind of natural to attack the thing that's attacking right. you.
It, so it really is kind of a self-defense response.
Yeah.
Because you want to go after the thing that is doing the harm to you.
Right. But the thing that made this case different was that he wasn't actively doing this to her at the time she did this. He was just sleeping in bed right. and she did it in his, like, he literally fucking woke up and his dick was gone, dude.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine.
Oh, God, it hurts my whole yeah. body's like shaking.
Dude,
like,
I'm sure.
God.
It's cringy as fuck.
Literally like, every guy's worst nightmare.
She straight sliced that shit off. And then she takes it in her hand. He's like, he wakes up and he's looking down and he basically just sees a hole with like a bunch of blood.
Oh God, I didn't even know what that would look like. Or
it would be so freaky. And then he had to stop the bleeding. So that was his first, put pressure on it. And then just like, didn't even know what was going on. She fucking takes off with his dick in her hand.
And they had a friend over. John had a friend staying there that night too.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's who got him to the hospital.
Oh, right. I didn't realize the friend was there. Yeah. I thought he called him.
No, the friend was there.
Damn. Well, good thing.
Yeah, seriously.
So she fucking leaves with his dick in her hands and the knife in her other hand. Like literally comes flying out of the apartment. God. Can you imagine if you were like walking to your unit and then all of a sudden someone comes flying out the door with a penis and a knife, like screaming?
Yeah, Jesus.
Crazy. So she gets in the car.
And this was early, early morning. We're talking like
5 a.m.
early hours in the morning.
Yep. It was like 4 something that she did it. So she drives and then there's like this open field kind of near a stop sign. She's sitting at a
7-Eleven.
At a 7-Eleven, got all stressed out and just chucks the thing out the window.
Into the field.
Like just straight dick laying in the field. Craziness.
Wild.
Yeah.
Savage too.
Yeah. I think it was almost just a blur for her. Like she just didn't, I mean, I don't know how premeditated this would be. Like, I think this was
a moment
of rage.
There was an opportunity to inflict pain
fear.
On her.
She's fearful, clearly.
I mean, none of us can possibly know how she felt or what she actually went through. And I mean, obviously it's not justifying slicing up somebody's appendage.
Yeah.
Because you're angry. But at the same time, it's like, you know, she felt like something had to be done.
She was being attacked.
So,
but he was sleeping at the time, which just right, makes
that's
it
the thing,
so
is,
hard.
Like, that's what's so fucking savage about it is he's asleep. I just can't believe that he didn't like wake up. Like,
what do you mean?
Like, she obviously had to like pull it up to slice it off.
Oh, I've been wondering that too. Like, did she lift it up to get a good angle when she did the slicing, like, or did she just like straight hack it?
No, I don't think so. I don't think, because that would have been messy as fuck.
I don't know. You think he would have stopped her though if he saw her like pulling it up and getting
and just the cutting, like,
I don't know.
How sharp was this fucking knife?
And like, I've heard like doctors talk about this, that it was like the cleanest cut ever. Like, it was straight, like, could be, it was perfect.
It was surgical perfection.
Yeah, surgical perfection, because as we'll talk about here,
yeah,
he does end up reattaching that shit. And it works just fine, as we will get into.
Ah, crazy. So it's 5:06 a.m. that morning when the Manassas City Police Department got a call. Oh my God, I can't even imagine that call.
Hi, we have a woman who cut her husband's penis off. She's currently on the loose with it. They thought she swallowed it. That was the first word they got over the dispatch.
Oh,
but a girl like got, I think they may have thought she like bit it off and swallowed it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so gross. I wonder if that's ever happened.
Yeah. Oh God. That is just some,
that is so next level shit.
So the first thing that investigators noticed when they arrived at the scene was there's blood droplets that led from the parking lot where the car was across the sidewalk and up the apartment stairs into apartment number 5. And through the living room into the bedroom on the left side, the police got there and were trying to find the penis. So they're like, look, like, can you imagine? I can only imagine these cops.
They like got their flashlight. They're like, all right, man.
They're like banter.
We're looking for
themselves.
A dick.
Like, all right, guys, let's find this fucking dick. Where'd it go? Dick on the loose.
I'm sorry. It's kind of funny.
It's kind of funny.
Dick on the loose.
But one of the officers was in the bedroom and they noticed a large pool of blood on the mattress. There was also a trail of blood on the ground as if someone had got up and started walking out of the room.
Yeah,
at
no
this
shit.
Point, there was still no sign of the penis. So the police go back into the kitchen and look in the fridge and the dishwasher and the garbage disposal.
Oh
man. Anywhere
sick.
They think of where this thing might have been. And when they were looking around, they came across some pamphlets that were about rape and domestic violence. That's what's so crazy too, is when he came home that night from his night out, Lorena had actually been reading literature on rape and domestic violence.
Yeah, she was trying to see, because I think he was playing this whole game because she, you know, was from another country and stuff, that like, because we're married, I can do whatever. Like, no one will care about your complaints. Like, police won't care. We're married. There's, you know, whatever. So she started being like educating herself and realizing, no, this is rape. This is domestic violence. Because, you know, she didn't do about anything for a long time about it. And I feel like she's finally just had enough.
Yeah.
Like, she had hit her boiling point for sure.
Very true. But on the flip side, could have been completely staged. She could have staged this entire incident if in fact he wasn't doing the things that he allegedly did to her.
Okay, but like, let's talk about
I'm
this
just
for
putting
a second.
It out there.
No, I know you're playing devil's advocate and I know what you really think. But
do you know?
I hopefully. But I feel like, I don't know, like, what would her reasoning be for cutting this guy's dick off unless he was doing things to her? Why would she do that otherwise? There is no other, it's not like he cheated on her.
She doesn't seem like she's like insane.
No,
like
no, she's
crazy
seemed,
fuck.
No, and like, why wouldn't he be like, she literally just did this for no reason. There was no signs. Like, it seemed like in his interviews, like, he knew he had this coming to him.
True.
You know, like, he didn't seem like completely shocked that she did this.
Yeah.
And why would she just do it? It doesn't make any sense. No one just stages this because they just really want to cut someone's dick off.
And
like,
that's
that makes
like
no
sense. Such a personal.
Yes.
Like injury to give somebody.
Yeah. Especially someone that you at one point loved and are married to. Like, they must have really had to hurt you. And especially for you to attack that body part shows what you have been through in that.
True.
Regard in the bedroom.
Yeah.
So I don't think she would just do this
for no
reason.
You don't think she's
just
an evil, evil person?
No, I think she was for a long time thought that because we're married, like, she didn't know exactly what legally she could do. And, you know, she finally hit the point where she was educating herself and decided to do something about her situation. I mean,
and
her going
case,
to the, yeah.
Why didn't she just fucking kill him? Like, she had an opportunity too. Like, if she was that evil murderer type individual,
It's not like she's going to get money for this.
And like plunge it into his chest.
Yeah, there's no insurance money to get. There's no like, you know.
It was clearly like a passion thing. Like she was like, you fucking.
It was defense.
Yeah. That's what I meant.
Yeah. But it was a crime of passion.
Rage. Yeah. So not long after, Lorena shows up at the police station and is requesting to report the abuse. Police told her that they were going to discuss this. But first, it was important for her to tell them where the fucking penis is, because time is of the essence. We got to find this penis before it's no good.
If I were John, I'd be like, get on it. Like, where is this? That's crazy.
And this thing is laying in a field and somebody could step on it. A dog could get it. Ew, a bird could get it.
It's probably just laying in the dirt.
It's done.
It's like covered in grass.
Wait, which didn't you want to see it?
Oh, yeah. You found a picture of that
shit. So, of course, knowing me, like, I'm like, I got to see what this thing looked like. I'm like, there's got to be a picture of it somewhere and I won't insert. But if you Google,
yeah, you better not. You
just Google, shut us down. Just Google John Bobbitt
penis.
Dick. Yeah. And it will come up.
John Bobbitt. Leaner.
And after looking at it, you can definitely see it's like definitely a clean cut for sure. See if you find it.
Oh, damn. Wait, that's not it. That looks fake. That looks like wax. That's it?
No. What the hell?
That is like wax.
No. It's very obvious when you see it.
I don't see it. I don't know. Maybe you should bring it up.
All right, hang on. Let me pull it up real quick.
Well, I typed in wiener. Maybe. That's not good enough.
All right, here we go.
Oh, I must have like safe search on or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you probably do.
Okay. Damn, people have dressed up as John and Lorena for Halloween.
Really?
Yeah, look at the. Oh, that's so fucking weird. It was like, it's like a guy with like fake blood all over his pants and then a girl with a knife.
Okay, here you go. You can kind of. That's really there you weird. Go. All right. Here's the urology expert holding
it up.
That's
it?
That's it right there.
That looks like a tiny mushroom.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
that is a small schmeckle.
I told you.
That is, like, tiny. It looks like a little, like a toe, like a big toe. That is a clean cut, though. Damn, yeah, that is, like, a nice slice.
Yeah.
Wow. That's really small.
Oh, my God.
Well, I bet without blood in it, it's going to be small.
Yeah, dude, like... Not that I give a fuck, but yeah, so that's it. Now you have that image permanently ingrained in your head. You're welcome.
Honestly, I pictured it way bigger than that. That's really small. So now she was like holding it in her, like I pictured her like holding it in her hand. It was like slinging around. Oh, but now I feel like it's this tiny thing in her palm now. She's
again,
like holding it.
You have to understand how a penis works, okay? It's yeah, not a understand. Fucking bone.
Right? I know. We went over come this on, earlier. My,
come on, man.
Oh, this episode is so cringe right now.
It is. But that's just the way the story goes.
This is the nature of this story, that's for sure.
So they're looking for this penis. Lorena tells them that she isn't exactly sure where it was, but that she remembers throwing out a bunch of things out the car window when she was driving by a 7-Eleven on Polk's Road. She basically threw it out her left window over her car and it landed. She literally like stuck her hand out the window and then gave it a little flip over the top.
Yeah.
Into the, like... Yep. Side of the road. And then she threw the knife into the garbage can. This also happened to be trash day. So before the trash came that day, the police had to run to get the trash before the truck did. And they were actually able to retrieve the knife, which you can look at the picture of the knife. It's a big old knife too. And clearly pretty sharp. But meanwhile, people are searching the area of the land that Lorena described throwing it out of. And then they eventually find it. The cops eventually find it, but they don't want to touch it. Because they don't have gloves. So they wait for the EMS. The EMS shows up because they got gloves and they grab the penis. And then they're like, oh shit, this is like an appendage. And what you're supposed to do is if, you know, if there's a missing limb or something, is get it on ice as soon as possible because that helps preserve the blood vessels and everything, I believe. And just preserve the overall appendage. And so they went to 7-Eleven and got a hot dog, little hot dog tray. Put ice in it and then laid the penis on the ice and in a 7-Eleven hot dog thing and rushed it off to the Prince William
Hell
Hospital.
Yeah. That's
and they were already right in the there. OR with him, the surgeon. So there was a
they're like, hang on, man, we're looking for the dick right now.
Right, because they're like, well, shit, this we don't have anything to reattach.
I
we're
wonder if they're
to
talking
just...
to him like, yo, look, so let's talk about options here. If we find the dick, here's what's going to happen.
Seriously.
But if we don't, what are your options? So tell us, you look this up. What happens if you can't reattach it? Or tell them about that case of the other woman.
Oh yeah. So I was curious, like, is there any other cases out there where a woman cuts off, mm-hmm. you know, a man's penis and does something? So there is a case where somebody did this, and this woman, she's like 48, and she cut off her 60-year-old husband. She was going to be divorcing him. Well, first tied him down to the bed, and then cut his dick off, and then put it down the disposal. So there was no penis to reattach. So what they have to end up doing is kind of just like closing up that area, and then they like have to reroute your whole like urethra and all of the, you know, urology stuff for urine and stuff, and you end up having to sit to pee as a guy. Like,
they reroute it through your butt.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's so gross.
That's terrible. I mean, that's
fucking frightening.
So John was extremely lucky.
Did you mention that girl?
Yeah. What about her?
What? So what ended up happening to her?
Oh, so the girl that did this to this other guy, I don't know why I'm laughing, but she ended up getting like a felony torture charge. Like they,
well, yeah,
because it was like very premeditated, and like she,
well, yeah,
tied him up, and then while he was awake, I believe she like cut it off. Like, I came in like that is horrible.
And then destroyed it.
So yeah, I mean,
yeah, that's pretty.
If strange. That happens, then the only thing they can do is they can kind of try to create another one from like other skin areas. I think like leg, arm, fat, and like kind of make a, you know, dick type thing. But
a dick type thing.
But yeah, I mean, otherwise you're screwed. Like, but that's where John Bobbitt was extremely lucky that not only did they find his and then they put it on ice and got it to the OR. And Dr. Berman, who's the main surgeon, performed the duty of sewing the penis back on. It took like 9 hours or something to do it. And they actually had a plastic surgeon in there. And because they have to, the main thing with doing this is it's not hard to like reattach an appendage, but it's hard to restore complete functionality to it. So like, obviously with this body part, there's a lot of blood vessels there. So they have to do microscopic blood vessel work, which is astounding that they can do this. I don't even understand how it's done, but they're able to reconnect all these tiny blood vessels basically in order to, you know, restore complete functionality. And yeah, he got That's pretty rough. Lucky. But meanwhile, on the other side of the hospital, Lorena was having a rape kit done because she was saying like, he raped me, you know. But by the next day, all the shit was over on paper. It was on the cover of every single newspaper and getting international coverage at this point, because this is like so bizarre and crazy and weird and unheard of. And with the help of her boss and good friend, Jana Bassetti, Lorena hired an attorney named James Lowe to represent her case. Jana also hired Lorena as an agent and manager and media rep to help her handle all the media attention she was receiving. One of the crazy things about this case was the fact that the newspaper started using her name instead of just wife. And so now her identity had been publicized. When she was arrested on the night of June 23rd, she told the police, he always has an orgasm and he doesn't wait for me to ever have an orgasm. He's selfish. That's what she was saying.
Yeah, she definitely is a little spicy, Lorena.
Yeah, definitely a little spicy.
That was a little strange comment there.
Yeah, very,
very he's selfish. Yeah, I feel like their relationship was like so sexual too.
Oh yeah.
Like, it must have started that way.
Well, if you think about it, like, he says like she didn't speak English very well. I don't think they really talked like and communicated that much. I think she was more of like a, I don't know, more of an object to him than
a
person.
He didn't respect her.
Yeah, exactly. Wife. Right. So she ended up being formally charged with malicious wounding, and John was also charged with marital assault. So they both caught charges on this whole incident, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And basically, John was being accused of abusing his wife. And it was confirmed through tests that Lorena had sexual intercourse the night that all this happened. However, John claims that he never had sex with her on this particular night, which is also interesting. So John completely denies. And I mean, you can see news or interviews with him talking about this. Mm-hmm. And he's, I don't know, I get very sketchy, you know, deceiving vibes from him just because he just kind of darts around the question as far as,
yeah, he really does.
Did you have sex with him? And he ends up kind of saying, well, she
yeah,
force sex a lot on of me. Blame. That's yeah. what he said. He said she was like trying to get me to do it and I didn't want to or something.
You can tell just by what they did with their lives after this where their intentions lied, both of them.
Oh, yeah.
Which we'll explain.
It's going to make things a lot more clear. But John ended up facing malicious sexual assault, which carried 20 years in prison versus life in prison if he had been convicted of marital rape. So John's trial began on November 8th, 1993. And leading up to the trial, there was a ton of publicity surrounding the story. Manassas was most well known for being a place where several Civil War battles took place. But it was now becoming known for the place where a woman cut off her husband's wiener. Both Lorraine and John talked about how they received a ton of publicity and attention to this case. It literally blew up. Like, there was cameras everywhere. They were being interviewed by everybody.
Yeah.
It was huge.
Mm-hmm. It really was.
So John's trial was a sexual crime, and therefore it required permission to air the trial on TV. The lawyers decided not to allow news stations in the room during the trial. During John's trial, he argued that he absolutely didn't rape his wife and that she was the one that attacked him. And he kind of maintains this whole thing like, Lorraine is just this crazy bitch. She's just crazy. Like, he has that attitude towards her. Like, she's just kind of like out of her mind. And, you know, she did all this stuff to me. And so I had to restrain her. You know, I had to do this all the time when we were fighting. And that's kind of his whole angle on this. But obviously, Lorraine had told a very different story. One thing that's important to note is that because of the laws in Virginia, the judge made it very clear that this trial was only about the incidents that occurred on June 23rd, meaning that any prior incidents of accused assault was not something that he could be charged with. They were only here to focus on the events from June 23rd and onward. Mm-hmm. During the trial, she talked about how John raped her that night, and that's why she chose to do what she did. She said that after he raped her, she went to the kitchen to drink some water, and that's when she took the knife, brought it back to the bedroom, and then proceeded to cut his wang off. One of the things that's interesting is the fact that there was a rip in her underwear. And it was a big discussion on whether the rip was actually ripped when John was literally ripping her underwear off of her to forcibly, you know, make his advances, or if she cut them with scissors and then it ripped to make it look like it was forcefully, because that's the whole thing, right? He's like, she's just kind of like setting this up for me, setting me up essentially. I had nothing to do with this, but then she's being like, this fucking guy is straight up,
attacked, you know, me,
abusing me. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's, who do you believe? You know, like, who do you believe? So John's verdict, after testifying for 2 days, the jury reached a verdict on November 10th, 1993. The jury was made up of 9 women and 3 men, and they didn't believe the prosecution's argument to be valid, and John was announced to be not guilty.
Yeah.
Got acquitted. A lot of people were really upset, but a lot of people were also happy and supported him. Mm-hmm. Many people argued that he was facing over 20 years in jail because he chose to have sexual relations with his wife, something that was thought to be a man's right.
That's absolutely ridiculous and disgusting. And it doesn't surprise me that people think like that, though.
Well, I think it's kind of an old-fashioned idea that's been around for, you know, long, long time.
Yeah.
And obviously is not right. After John was acquitted, he moved to a farm in Colorado Springs, actually, and he wanted to get as far away from everyone as he could. But, of course, everyone's wanting to do an interview with him.
Yeah.
He was getting, like, peppered with interviews constantly.
Oh, yeah.
But, however, he decided it was best if he stayed out of the public eye until Lorraine's trial was over, which was coming up next. While he was at the ranch, he met a girl named Stephanie, and they dated for a short amount of time. So already moved on. And during this time, the media was completely eating up the story. At this point, a lot of people were looking at Lorraine as someone who is this crazy monster, and they were obsessed with talking about it. It was all over the news and late night TV. They were doing like SNL sketches. Yep. There's all these clips of comedians, late night hosts, like
people dressing up for Halloween,
kind of like making fun of it.
Yeah, it was like a big like pop culture story in a way.
And people would like describe Lorena as this hot-blooded Latina woman, you know, like spicy, this fire.
A lot of women felt like really empowered by her. And they're like, go, bitch. Like,
yeah, totally. You
know, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of girls out there who have been wrongly just taken advantage of by men. And this was in a way like a win, you know?
So Lorena said that all of this, though, had a very negative effect on her and caused her great depression and lots of anxiety, which I can only imagine.
Yeah.
And on the flip side, of course, John is getting all kinds of positive attention.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're the guy that got his dick cut off and reattached. And
poor you.
Yeah, seriously. Howard Stern hosted a Miss New Year's Eve pageant, and he made the main focus of the show a telethon that raised money for John. God. By the end of the show, callers donated $19,000. Because obviously, after having this happen, he was in tons of debt.
Yeah.
Tons of medical bills after this.
And legal bills,
too. Yeah, legal bills, too. Right, exactly. And, yeah, I mean, after this happened, or I'm sorry, did I say $19,000? It's $190,000.
Holy shit. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
For him?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Because basically, after this whole ordeal, he had to file bankruptcy. Like, he had no money because he was separating from Morena and, like, they didn't have any money.
Yeah.
They were, you know, basically broke. And he had all these medical bills. I'm sure he had a couple hundred thousand. Can you imagine a surgery like that would cost? 9-hour surgery would cost?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Like, oh, my God.
Like, emergency surgery. I'm sure the cost is insane. That's a major
surgery. So unique, too. Like, it's a
specialized.
Oh, my God.
I'm sure he had, like, $500,000 in debt or something crazy like that. So he just filed bankruptcy. And what's actually crazy and fucked up is that because he did this, the hospital and the surgeons never got paid.
Wow.
They never got paid for this surgery.
Wow.
That they did.
Wow.
No money has ever been paid. Yeah, to
because
them.
He paid because he was filed like bankruptcy. Wow.
And that's then crazy. John decides that he's going to form a band called Severed Parts.
Nice.
And he actually went on tour for a little while and sold Severed Part shirts, like merch.
Sweet.
So he was milking this for sure. I mean, he needed money, so he was going to take any opportunity he had. He was constantly on different TV shows and radio shows. He was interviewed by just about everybody out there, every major radio show or TV show you can imagine. But there's a lot of split opinions between men and women. Most men saw it as the worst thing you could possibly do to them, and most women saw it as she was being abused for so long that she eventually struck the area that was doing the most harm.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. It's like I said, a weapon.
And like you said, I mean, women were taken to the streets, like literally like, you know, rallying and being like, support Lorena and stuff. It's really crazy. So we're going to get into Lorena's trial here in a sec. I just want to thank our last sponsor, Hunt a Killer. If you're listening to this podcast, you probably love stories about true crime. Imagine that, an investigative journalism. And if you're like us, you probably get immersed in the story and often find yourself trying to solve the case. Who doesn't love a good case like the Mara Murray case? How many people have spent hours just pondering over that or
me.
Their own time? I mean,
I just
so
want
many
that
people.
One to be solved so bad.
Oh, man, I know.
I just want that for her family. So
I know. God. But we have something to satisfy that detective in you. Introducing Hunt a Killer, your new favorite obsession. It's a monthly subscription game where you become a detective immersed in a murder mystery. Each month you'll receive crime scene photos, evidence, motive, and suspect information that you'll need to solve the crime. It's so interactive and convincing that it looks and feels real, from the newspaper clippings to the clothing left at the crime scenes. And if you think it will be easy, think again.
It's very hard.
You'll be racking your brain to solve the mystery and anxiously awaiting next box of clues. So this is something that takes a very long time to solve. And each week you, like the current one, I think you eliminate a suspect every box you get. And they give you the whole backstory. And, you know, this box that we got is about a pharmacist in Chestnut Falls, Illinois, who was murdered on the night of his high school reunion. And basically we have to figure out who his murderer is. There's five suspects. And then they send you this whole packet, a map. I mean, you really almost have to like dedicate a whole area to it and have like, you know, get the little bulletin board out and start pinning things.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very real and it's something that you can do solo or you can do in a group. It's a great date night. Like,
yeah, I was going to say great date night.
Pour over it on a date night.
Yeah.
Be detectives together.
Be really fun as like definitely with a partner to try to figure it out.
Yeah, definitely. And if you're doing it alone or, you know, there's an online community and you can work with other people at the same point in story as you, there's like forums and all kinds of other people that are into this as well. There's actually over 60,000 people that are in the Hunt a Killer online community. And this is super highly rated. And right now, just for our listeners, you can go to huntakiller.com/milehigher and get 20% off your first box. and they only accept 200 members per day. So hurry to take advantage of this offer. That's huntakiller.com/milehigher for 20% off your first box. huntakiller.com/milehigher. See if you have what it takes to get into the mind of a serial killer and solve the mystery. Very cool stuff. Lorena's trial started on January 10th, 1994. She was on trial for malicious wounding charges. This was the trial that everyone, especially the media, was really looking forward to. Cameras were actually allowed in the courtroom during a trial. So it was a huge deal.
Yes. TV sensation.
Back then, I mean, the OJ trial was so big for TV that they had to take advantage of this too. The trial was originally set for December 23rd, but was moved to January 10th because media outlets were worried that no one would tune in because it was so close to the holidays. Can you imagine that? They moved the trial to January 10th.
That's crazy.
Lorena's plan for defense was to claim temporary insanity and irresistible impulse. They were going to argue that she went through so much trauma from being raped and therefore temporarily had like a just snapped and went berserk.
That's really like understandable.
I do too. I think you can definitely like hit your breaking point. I mean, we always say like
so angry.
Don't hit your breaking point, but I think we all have a breaking point that you can only take so much abuse or so much shit.
It's like if you're like you were sitting in a cage like an animal and someone's just poking you with a stick over and over and over over. Eventually you're going to fucking take that stick and cut that shit off.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it makes a lot of sense to me. And before the trial started, the judge actually offered her a plea bargain saying that if she admitted that this was premeditated, that she would only have to go to jail for 4 months and wouldn't have to go on to have a big trial or a risk of being convicted, which I don't know. Is it worth it just to admit that it was premeditated? Apparently, Lorena didn't think so. She denied the bargain because she knew that if she took it, then she would never be able to be an American citizen, which is interesting because that's another thing to this too, is like she's not an American citizen. She's from Venezuela and the whole idea, like this whole thing is also like she was probably with him too because, you know, if you're married to an American citizen, especially a Marine, you know, he's going to be able to help you get citizenship and, you know, sort of live out that American dream that I think she wanted. So she was willing to risk 20 years in order to have the chance to be an American citizen.
Wow, that's crazy.
And at that point, the trial continued on. Court TV, now known as True TV, was the station hosting the trial coverage. Everyone was glued to their TVs during the trial. Over 60% of the country was watching. And during the trial, many people testified about how John and Lorena didn't have a good relationship and how many times they would fight. Like, they brought in tons and tons of people that would basically say, yeah, it was a crazy relationship.
Yeah.
Just constant fighting and
just really toxic.
And one of the things that she talked about was the first time he had ever punched her. She said that they were driving back home on the highway. Lorena says that John had been drinking, but was still driving and going around 85 or 90 miles per hour and was swerving.
So scary.
She said that she then tried to grab the steering wheel, and that's when he just straight up punched her in the chest.
Damn.
Which is fucking ridiculous.
So scary.
And then she said that once they got home, John grabbed her arm and brought her into the apartment and then proceeded to kick her and tell her that I told you not to cry, quote unquote.
Wow.
After this, an officer showed up, and Lorena says that John became a totally different person. He wasn't aggressive and yelling and all of a sudden was very calm.
It's this dude's sign.
Yeah, seriously, look it up. Lorena decided to leave the apartment and sleep in her car in the parking lot after work.
Lorena oh my not, God.
Lorena denied ever telling anyone about this incident because she was so mortified that the person she loved reacted in this way. And she
he's an Aries.
No shit.
Aggressive.
Yeah.
And they're known for being really aggressive in sex, like men. I even talked about this in my video with Kathleen.
Yeah, you did.
Yes. That's kind of crazy.
Makes sense.
Yeah. I wonder what she
is. So he definitely, his behavior fits his, you know, some of his signs.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
And the whole thing with Lorena too is like she said she was raised Catholic and she doesn't believe in divorce, which Catholics don't believe in divorce. But I think many Catholics would say that it's okay to divorce somebody if you're literally being raped and physically abused. Like,
oh my gosh, I can't, this is crazy. So she's a Scorpio born on Halloween, like the craziest type of Scorpio.
Wow.
And wow, that's like the sexual sign, like, and it's the sign of revenge. Like, if one sign is going to do something like this, it would be Scorpio. I literally could not have guessed those signs better than that. An Aries and a Scorpio. That makes so much sense. Like, those are the two signs I definitely would put for both of them if I were to guess before I looked those up. That's insane. Well, no wonder this shit went down so wrong.
Yeah.
An Aries and a Scorpio in an insane sexual relationship.
Explosion.
That's toxic.
Yeah.
Whew. Damn. Well, this all makes sense now.
But many of the other people that testified on Lorena's behalf said that they had a feeling that she was being abused, and many people even talked about how they personally saw him abuse her, as well as seeing the impacts on her body. Oh man, this is, I mean, might as well say this. Another thing that she brought up in the trial was the fact that John was really into anal. Him and often come home late at night after being out drinking, him and forced her to have sex.
Ew, so that's even, forced her into that.
Ooh, yeah, forced into that. I don't know. That doesn't sound very good.
And like I said, when you hear what this dude did after all this, you can tell that he, like, really was this like sexual sex as fuck fiend, person.
Yeah. And I think, and then she just was not having it. She did not like this. But in addition, there were many of John's friends that testified in court that John had a history of talking about his sexual fantasies. They said that John talked about how he liked to have forced sex because that turned him on. And he denies this, but honestly, I think he's lying. I think he did really like this. Really? Like,
that's your current guess on it.
Yeah, yeah. I think
just by hearing him talk, that's what I thought too.
He just seems like that type of aggressive guy. I mean, it kind of fits. I mean, Aries, you know, Marine, tough, you know, physical. So I don't know. It kind of makes sense that he'd be into that type of stuff. But there was actually another incident that was brought up involving a tape recorder in 1993. Lorena says that at the time she was wanting to get a divorce from John, and so he brought a tape recorder to start recording all the insults and put downs that John would say to her so that she could show it to the divorce lawyer. She said that when John found out about the recorder, he was extremely pissed and physically and sexually abused her just straight on the spot. She also said that John threatened her and that if she tried to divorce him, that he would follow her everywhere and wait outside her work. So that's crazy. I mean, if what she's saying is true, then John's just a complete fucking nut job that, is scary individual to be married with for sure. And when it was time for John to take the stand, he denied ever having forced sex with his wife. However, he did admit to restraining her on many occasions. And he said that he would sometimes push her, hold her down to try and restrain her from hitting him, but that he would never hit or hurt her, which I just think is bullshit. And I think if you see him talking about this, you can just tell he's bullshitting.
Yeah, I agree.
But they also brought up that in February 1991, John was charged with assault and battery on his wife. He said that he never pleaded guilty or admitted doing it. But when an officer was asked to take the stand, the officer confirmed that John willingly entered a plea of guilty. John kept denying or even remember being in the incident when he was charged, even though there was actual proof being presented. So this was like, he was like a abuser for a while. And there was like multiple incidents. He didn't, you know, he went to jail multiple times. Like we said, the cops were there all the time. So this was like kind of an ongoing thing that, you know, eventually could blow up into what it did. I mean, it seems very plausible. Lorena actually received a lot of support from the Hispanic community during her trial. On a daily basis, there were upwards of 50 people who would be there to cheer her on when she entered the courtroom for the day, as well as when she left. During the trial, Lorena says that she doesn't remember actually doing the cutting. She said the next thing she remembers was driving the car, but still being confused about what was going on.
That doesn't surprise me. Like, I can see how you would just be like in a complete blur.
I think you'd just have to be in a rage to do that. Because, I mean, who wants to do that? Who wants to cut off somebody's, you know, genitals? Like, that's just crossing the line, no matter what, male or female. Yeah. That's just like fucked. Like, you don't do that.
I know.
That's really, really savage. So, I mean, she had to have just been in this insane
state
mindset.
Of mind, yeah. Well, I think when you're just feeling attacked, like, it makes sense. You've been through enough. Like, it's like almost like PTSD at that point. It's it's like triggering.
And she did say that after she like threw, you know, threw his dick away and stuff, that she felt she felt like a sense of peace finally. Like she finally felt like a weight lift all, like it's over. Like,
yeah, he can never do that to me again. Yeah,
that's absolutely true.
And if you're feeling like you're stuck in the marriage, you can't get divorced, you can't get help, then maybe that feels like the only way you can really escape the rapes.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. Definitely makes sense.
It's really hard for me to like I have to say, I am a woman who has never been and I know it's really, really rare, sadly, but I've never been sexually mistreated ever. And so it's hard to understand like what she could have been feeling. Right. Like I've never had that feeling of being taken advantage of in that way of my body.
Right.
So
it's something completely different. It's on another level for sure.
I feel like unless you've been through it, you can't understand what she may have been feeling in that moment, you know? So
we can't even understand really this whole situation when you think about it. Like,
neither
of us have been in like an abusive relationship or had.
And we've been together since we were 17. So it's been pretty much it for each other.
We've only been together.
And we have a very, very like mellow relationship. We don't have like fighting like this. Like, I don't know. I've never like raged with a guy to like even know what it would feel like to be scared of. I've never been scared of a guy ever. And that's really, really rare.
Or just like ever felt like violence was needed in the situation.
Yeah. Yes. Never felt like I needed to defend myself ever or anything like that.
Somebody was going to come, you know.
Hurt me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-mm. Which I feel really, really lucky because the more I learn and the more I hear, feel like it's so uncommon to not have gone through stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's wild. You're
definitely fortunate for sure.
Yeah.
And I mean, during her trial, like so many people came forward, clients that Lorena had at the nail salon came forward and said that they remembered seeing bruises all over her arms and stuff. Like,
oh yeah, that too. But yeah, but a lot of women just like came forward just saying that they have gone through similar things. You know, they just felt like they could be honest because of Lorena.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and that's the thing too. It wasn't like she was just bottling all this inside. Like she was actively like kind of telling people. She told this particular client that her husband was hurting her. So like, this was like something that was ongoing, but just nothing. There was no action to separate them or, you know, stop this from happening. Really, it just seemed like, I don't know.
I think she felt really trapped.
I think she felt extremely trapped.
And I think her being from a different country was a huge part of it. Just her lack of understanding and
culture, and just
And I think he was misinforming her a lot too.
I do too. Yeah, I think he was totally like
threatening her.
Kind of like playing a power position.
Controlling her, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So initially, all the state psychiatrists were in agreement and thought that Lorena had a sound mind and full control when this happened, and that was more of a matter of spite and anger. However, at one point during the trial, one of the state psychiatrists changed his testimony and said that she was actually out of control during this incident. Hmm. So Lorena's verdict was made up by a jury made up of 7 women and 5 men, who found her to be temporarily insane. Lorraine was not going to be sent to prison, but instead was sent to a psychiatric ward for 45 days. Virginia law stated that if someone was acquitted by temporary insanity, then they must report to a hospital for mental evaluation. It was determined that she was experiencing PTSD, major depressive disorder, as well as panic disorder during the time she did this.
Yeah.
So there you go. I mean, she went to a facility and they clearly were like,
makes sense.
She has major mental problems and she broke. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They said that they didn't believe she had any control of her impulses at the time of the incident. And they said that from John threatening to continue to rape and beat her and follow her, even if she tried to divorce him, this was just, you know, building up this psychotic behavior in Lorena.
Yeah.
Even when she was in the psych ward, Lorena got all kinds of attention. The media was still trying to do anything they could think of to be able to get some footage of her. One time there was a helicopter flying around the hospital during this time, trying to get footage of Lorena while she was outside. Big names and news companies to try to send flowers to the hospital.
Just to like, that's so sketch. Just
I mean, they really made a spectacle out of this. Oh, like a complete, sure. Like this thing blew.
Oh yeah. It was like a big, big story.
Blew up. Lorena actually ended up getting released on March 1st, 1994, and was deemed not a threat to herself or society.
God, you were like, what, two when this happened? I was like one.
Yeah, just a wee little baby.
We were babies.
But shortly after this, she filed for divorce from John, of course. I mean, you can't, I mean, there's no reconciling this relationship, I think, after this. So this is kind of where John begins his new life. So after several months, after Lorena was released from the psych hospital, John decided to get into porn. Yes.
Yeah.
John is basically approached by Ron Jeremy, who is a very famous adult film star / filmmaker. He's like old now, but one of the OGs of porn. And basically was like, hey, like, come make a movie with us. You know, you'll make money. And yeah, it's going to, everybody's interested in this guy that had his dick reattached. So John ended up doing a couple adult films. One was called John Wayne Bobbitt Uncut. And of course, I had to Google this. And I ended up actually finding a clip from this film.
What?
There is a clip on Pornhub.
I kind of want to watch it now. But I kind of don't. Porn makes me nauseous.
It's really, yeah. I mean, it's just really, eh.
I think I could live without it.
I don't know. I don't know, man. I don't know.
God, that's crazy to want to do that after all that. But it definitely shows like the type of dude he was.
Well, I think they were like, you got to show the world that your penis works. Like, why not? You got to, like, people will be so interested and intrigued by the guy, you know, and if he's doing porn, like, oh, that's like going to be crazy, like people are going to be all jazzed up about that. So John Bobbitt moves to Las Vegas, Nevada when he starts working with Ron Jeremy, and John was expecting to make a lot of money out of these films, but ended up basically just getting taken advantage of. And like we said, this is about the point that he files for bankruptcy, and then he ended up going on and doing another adult film called Frankenpenis.
That's awesome.
Known as John Wayne Bobbitt's Frankenpenis. Because actually what this guy did, so yeah, I mean, I'll just put it out there. So this guy is like definitely not porn star material.
Really?
No. I would say no. And I don't know. Everybody can make their own opinion, but that's just my opinion. I don't think he's like porn star.
I feel like most of our audience is not going to go look.
I bet a lot of people will actually. Because it's so, I mean, you got to kind of know, like, right? You got to know what the hell. I couldn't find this film, unfortunately. I wish I could have, because apparently what he did is his first two films that he did, it was just like, you know, all him. And he had full functionality, but he didn't have like, I don't know, something seems a bit off. I'll just put it that way. Like,
really?
Like, it seems like it's sort of working, but it's definitely not, he's definitely not getting like maximum performance out of this thing. Like, that's the only thing. Like, it's it's a little fucking, yeah, it's a little disturbing. So what he ends up
Josh
doing,
Josh gives him a C.
I don't know, it's almost a D.
Oh, a D. F?
D plus. D I'll plus. Give him a D plus. D plus performance, okay. I would say. And I'm not a porn expert by any means. But,
oh, sure.
But anyways, what this guy ended up doing is, because I think his first two like performances were like, eh. And probably because Ron Jeremy was like, hey, you got to like beef this thing up, man. Like, we got to, I want to do Frank and Penis. You got to get this thing looking crazy. So he goes to another surgeon and he actually gets fat injected into his penis.
So weird.
And
God, leave the poor thing alone. The wiener's like, God damn,
yeah,
just
it's
let
been
me
through
live.
The ringer, Jesus. But they likened it to like a Coke can. So if you think about Yeah, I mean, it was just like kind of short and fat, you know?
Short and fat, okay.
So, yeah.
But
so,
cans are kind of long.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I
can't believe we're having this conversation right now on this podcast.
I know.
Oh, my God. What is our life?
But then he ended up reversing it.
Yeah, he's like, fuck that. Didn't look good.
But anyway, John goes on his way. And in 1994, he ended up being charged with striking Christina Elliott, a 21-year-old former exotic dancer he met in Las Vegas on a publicity tour. And on August 31st, 1994, he was convicted of battery and sentenced to 15 days in jail, which, come on. I mean, clearly this guy's a fucking woman abuser. Like,
Yeah.
It's so obvious. I mean, multiple women. I mean, he's just continuing this, you know, cycle of violence. And while he lived in Vegas in 1998, he worked as many jobs: bartender, limo driver, mover, pizza delivery driver, tow truck operator, Franken penis. And he also had a stint serving at a wedding chapel as a minister of a Universal Life church there. But then in 1999, he pled guilty to a felony charge of attempted theft on stealing $150,000 worth of clothing in Nevada. What he was doing was essentially stealing clothes and then returning them to different store locations. In that same year, he started dating a girl named Desiree. And at one point, Desiree started paying for John to live in an apartment because he had no money. She would travel back and forth between where she lived and to the apartment. When they broke up, Desiree wanted to make sure that the apartment was going to transfer over to just his name. And when she went to confirm, John got extremely aggressive and started to beat her with random objects in the apartment. Desiree then claims that she was tied up and repeatedly raped. So this dude, like, this dude's got multiple victims and multiple women that are saying he's a rapist. I mean,
yeah.
And honestly, like, when you see this dude and you see an interview and you're like, yep, he seems like a piece of shit for sure that would do this kind of stuff. Desiree says that John told her that she was his new Lorena and that nothing would ever keep him away from her. At one point, Desiree decided that she was going to try and literally play dead so that maybe he would think she's dead and leave her alone. At one point, she did this to the point where he was trying to see if she was still breathing. He then untied her and walked towards the door, and that's when she said she ran out of the apartment. John was found guilty of harassing her and was charged with harassment. And at the time of the charge, there weren't allegations of rape, and so a rape kit was not involved. So he's just like getting away with raping. It's crazy. However, during that day that all this happened, there happened to be a boy living in the apartment across the hall, actually, that heard some yelling from outside his apartment. And so when he looked out the people, he actually saw John dragging Lorena by the hair through the hallway of the apartment. Or Desiree, I'm sorry, through the apartment. And then in 2003, he was sentenced to prison for violating his probation. And then he was arrested on battery charges involving his then wife, Joanna Farrell. Mm-hmm. So he's just like one victim after the next.
Yeah. He's just like that kind of guy. You can just tell by just how he was. Like, he clearly, his, you know, personality was a certain type of dude, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like we've all like known that type of guy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just like slimy.
Worse than that. But as far as Lorena, though, after she got out of the psych ward, she wanted to participate in either like a TV special or a movie about her life. Because this was a way for her to make money, but she also wanted a chance to like tell the truth and the, you know, like the real story of like what happened and not just what the media was portraying. If some type of show was to happen, the money was going to go into a trust and the only beneficiary of that trust was going to be Lorena. However, her friend boss, Jana, convinced her to sign a contract that would give 15% of the shares to Jana. Lorena said that when she signed the contract, she had no idea that Jana was going to be taking some of the money from her. And she says that she felt extremely betrayed by her and was forced to cut ties.
Damn.
Yeah, that's savage.
It is.
She was also offered a $1 million deal with Playboy to do a spread in Playboy.
And she, yeah.
She turned it down. She was like, I wasn't raised like that. So
good for her. That really shows you.
Again,
like if she was the type to stage this whole thing, make up this whole thing and just cut someone's dick off for no reason, wouldn't she be also the type to go and make as much money off of it as possible? Yes. And she's not. So I think that really shows the fact that he went on and did porn. She got offered probably more and didn't.
So after her trial, her family actually moved from Venezuela to the U.S. to support their daughter. And in December of 1997, actually, Lorena was charged with a misdemeanor of assault and battery from punching her mother in the face.
Damn.
Because they apparently had an ongoing little feud going on, but ultimately she was found guilty. So who knows if that's indeed what happened. But I mean, I think people on, you know, kind of, who back up John Bobbitt and this whole idea that she staged this and she was just as crazy and violent and stuff,
yeah.
You know, things like this, you might be like, oh, maybe she did play into this. And I think she did have definitely a role in this. And obviously nothing she did deserved what she got. But at the same time, I think it was just toxic. Like, I think she was also like not making it any better for herself either.
Yeah, no.
You know, But after all this, Lorraine actually decided to go to college, and that's where she met a man named David, and David and her hit it off, and their friendship turned into love. And then she so she ended up finding love.
Good, happy story and, ending.
Yeah, and she ended up devoting a ton of time, even to this day, spreading awareness on domestic violence and helping women get out of bad relationships. She even created the Lorena Gallo Foundation in 2008.
And that just, again, shows you she didn't fucking make this up.
Right? Which, this is a nonprofit organization that works with various community organizations helping victims of domestic violence. So that's, I mean, she does that, you know, even now. And yeah, it just shows her character for sure. Mm-hmm. And I think during this time, like after it happened, I think they only like saw each other once from like now to when the incident happened. I think they only like were in the same room once for like a show or something. An interview,
yeah.
Like in the early 2000s or something. I think.
What show were they on? They were on something.
I can't remember what it is.
I can't remember either. Dang it. It was something where they had to like see each other face to face though. And they said it was really awkward. Imagine like everything changed after that night.
Yeah. But what's so just bizarre about all this is that Lorena has talked about how she still gets letters from John where he's like expressing his regret and how he acted and treated her.
Yeah. And he's said the things that like he still loves her.
Yeah. Stuff. Like he still tries to get in touch with her, even gets her Valentine's Day cards. The fuck?
Damn.
Desperate. He just, dude, fucking desperate.
Yeah.
And she's just like, leave me the fuck alone. Like,
yeah,
the hell.
Gross. Get away from me.
And the weird thing is like, whenever you ask him if he says, you know, I love Lorena still and stuff, he just like denies it whenever you ask him, even though that's the truth. But obviously this case, like when, you know, look at it as a whole, it's fucking wild, but it's also a real good example or a real bad example, I guess. Of, you know, domestic violence and what happens when a relationship goes south and there's sexual assault happening within a marriage and, you know,
yeah,
all the consequences.
It's just a huge, it's a great example of domestic violence and talking about marriage, like domestic violence within a marriage, sexual abuse within a marriage, which is often not talked about because I think, you know, there's kind of this like, unsaid thing that like if you're married it's like fair game, like that's how it really used to be, like we said
traditional
earlier
idea, sure.
But yeah, I mean it's really, I mean this case launched like them, they like made laws because of this.
Yep,
right?
The Violence Against Women Act.
Yeah, so yeah, it's an interesting case for sure.
So yeah, I mean it sucks that this happened, but at the same time I understand why it happened, you know.
Yeah, I do too.
And I think that obviously the good things are nobody died in this case.
Yeah, and he turned out fine.
Sorry
guys, it's like it's 12 a.m right now. I'm really tired.
Late really night podcast.
Yeah, we normally don't record this late, but we just
we're
did
feeling
today.
Crazy tonight.
Crazy.
God damn, dude.
I'm sorry, I think I have like I'm so sorry. What am I supposed to do if I'm sick and I'm on a podcast for like an hour and 40 minutes? I can't not cough at all.
Swallow the cough, man.
How do you swallow a cough? I think I'm developing like bronchitis or some shit. I don't know. I've been coughing so much today.
Anyways.
Okay, Josh.
Sorry.
You're so perfect.
I'm
Josh
sorry
never
that you're
is
coughing.
Sick.
I hope you feel better. I will make you some tea after this. How about
you know
that?
What? You fucking better.
I'll make you some tea, honey.
You better.
I will do it for you.
Okay, thank you.
But to wrap this whole thing up, you know, this case is still like has pertinence to today. And obviously, like you mentioned the Me Too movement, all of that. Like,
yeah.
You know, sexual violence is still very like rampant and apparent in society. And it's a real issue that we got to continue talking about and, you know, trying to improve. And I think a lot of it is just changing, you know, not only changing men's minds about, you know, what a relationship is and, you know, equal, you know.
It starts at childhood, though.
Right.
Like, it's more about raising good children.
Yeah.
You know, that's really how you change the world and fix this problem. And is like raising good men, raising good women, too. Raising women who respect men as well as respect themselves and vice versa with men. And I think that as a parent is like your responsibility before sending your kid into the world.
And not teaching your kids that just because you're a male means you exactly, have some type of saying. Advantage or power
that you over have a to female. Respect right. them as an equal.
Right. Yes. You should treat them as you would treat any other guy.
That's what we'll be teaching our sons.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's I was always sure. taught to respect women and to
and it shows with never, you for sure.
Yeah, never.
Josh was such a gentleman. He always still is, not was. But when I first met you, I was like, wow, he's like the most respectable guy I'd ever met.
I try so to I married be. Him. I try to be. I mean, it's just, it's fucking easy, guys. Like, treat other people the way you want to be treated. Like, how, we got to go yeah. back to preschool and like, some people just didn't get that lesson. Like, I some know. People just never learned that.
It goes
never
back got that to shitty parenting, though. Like, right. look it's what John was taught as a child.
Right.
And, so, and that you use someone as an object.
You feel kind of bad for him in that sense.
Yeah, like
he
you
was
do.
Clearly abused. He clearly is fucked up mm-hmm. and has a lot of, you know, traumatic experiences.
Yeah, from of course. Like you have to have some type of compassion for people that commit these things. Like even though it's so terrible and there's no right. excuse, like there's got to be some part of your heart where you understand that at one point they were a child and put through something to right. make them like this. I don't know. It's hard.
It is hard.
Endless discussion.
But I mean, I think this story is at least a lesson learner for all of us. And, you know, obviously if you're experiencing domestic violence, you gotta get help and get out of a situation like that.
Yeah. We will ASAP. Leave resources in the description box, actually.
Yeah. We'll leave the phone number for the National Domestic Violence Hotline, which quickly is just 1-800-799-7233.
Because there are so many ways to get help, even if you're, yeah. you know, you're not sure if your situation, you know, you never know. So always reach yeah, out if yeah. you're concerned about your situation.
I mean, and it's such a real thing. I actually had a client when I was working in the IT that was a women's shelter.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah. yeah. And I used to go over there and
it's a battered women's shelter.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's just, I remember hearing phone calls and like, just, you know, the people that work there talking about, you know, talking to women that are like, I got to get out before my husband gets home or. You know, I got to get my kids out and
so scary.
Don't have any way to get there. We need help. And it's there. The crazy thing is that there's so many people and women that are dealing with these types of situations in our world right now.
I know.
It's really sad. And
heart really goes out to them. It just sucks yeah. to not have like, you know, basic respect of your body. It's just so shitty. It's so vulnerable. And
it's not the way it should be no, at all. It's no. just completely unfair. And yeah, I mean, shit. I don't know.
It's an intense topic.
It is. For sure. It is.
yeah, it's now we're starting to just repeat. Like, I know. It's like really late.
Feeling sad now. But anyways.
It's an intense topic.
It is a very intense topic.
As like funny as the whole thing is, like cutting off the day, the penis like, and everything. Yeah, it's a really serious topic.
But yeah, I mean, hopefully you guys found this story interesting. Especially if you haven't heard it before.
Yeah, and I want to know your guys' thoughts too. Like, what do you think? Do you think this was handled right? Should Lorena have gotten in more trouble?
Was she justified?
Should John have gotten in more trouble?
Right. Well, that's
did they
the kind of
break even? Was it kind of like fair at the end?
Well, I think that's kind of the result of it was. Is it just kind of
like what the judge
these things
to
offset?
See like,
yeah. The charges offset each other, and they're like, we don't really know what to do. Yeah. Like, it's he shed. Case. You know, it's
he said, she said.
Her word versus his. So,
yep.
But should she have served at least some type of punishment for like, I mean, at the end of the day, she sliced it off. But then at the end of the day,
I think it's self defense.
He, you know, he was accused of all these other yep. sexual assaults. So, yeah, I mean, kind of seems fair. But let us know what you guys think. Yes. Make sure you subscribe, like this video on YouTube if you're watching. But yeah, guys, thanks for listening and joining us on the Malahar Podcast. We will see you guys. Next time. Stay safe out there.
Stay woke.
We'll see you next time.